Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Guzu Saba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity is so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, and that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Talk to him, Dr. Clark.
He called for the unity and the redemption of the African world.
Salute them, honorable Marcus.
We were not ready to listen then.
They might not have been ready then.
There's wonder whether we are ready.
Ain't no doubt about it.
To listen.
We ready, baby.
Now.
Let's go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Black fly high. Woo! Black fly high. Black fly high. Black fist in the sky with the side to side. It's the black fly high.
Colors forever, Garvey would never die. On my 90, the throne ready, let's take a ride. X won't fix, men don't, choose a side. This is the path for the warriors. Seldom travel, yet still bad, glorious. Black power represents us. Do we the rolling with Africa or against us? Ha!
God, melanating and elevating, holding the main charge. The green is for the cradle. Africa, everything first, the earth's navel. This excellency, put it together as a symbol of liberation. That's how we get the letters, RBG.
Turn this motherfucking shit up.
Ain't by where you stay, it's by the motherland, AFR, I see.
fuck a cop, hip hop. Make your head bob, bounce to this socialist movement. My environment made me the nigga I am. Uncle Sam came and got me and the rest of my fam. Try to infiltrate and murder off the best of my clan. I'm not American, punk Democrat or Republican, remember that. Most of the cats you know be hustling. My mama worked all her life and still struggling. I blame it on the government and say it on the radio. And if you don't already know, all these Uncle Tom ass kissing niggas got to go. Got to go, got to go.
Holler to him, man. Yeah. Here we go, turn it up, let's start. From block to block, the snatching heart to Jack and Mark. And the punk police can't fake me a mess. We can ask me some safety. But right now, I got my mind set up. Looking down the bottle, I'm a gun, get up. Cause it's time to make the payback back. To my brothers on the block, better stay strapped, black. And accept no substitutes. I bring troops to the youth, tear a roof over the whole school.
Discovered this, as I first said, according to the teachings of Almighty God to me. by the joint, and it still can be proven today that the black man have two people in him.
How, sir?
Yes, sir. You have two.
How is this? How can this be proved?
And by the joint. The joint you have here, take for an instant. Well, let me come to the surface first. You go to the darkest people that you can find in Africa, where that they has never been touched by Caucasian people. And you will find that one will be a little shader browner than the other. And this man set up a birth control law to take that browner one and marry the browner one on to the browner one and kill off the black. And he kept this going for 600 years. First, he had a little brown race of people after 200 years. And the next 200 years, he had a little yellow race of people, or red race, we say. And the next 200 years, he had a pale white.
Method of birth control.
Yes, he killed the black baby and saved the brown one. Killed the brown one, saved the brown one. Killed the brown one and saved the yellow one. That'll tell you, run it into its last stage. And the last stage is white. And that can be done today. It is not nothing that is a mystery, impossible. It can be done today. But I don't think that they want any more grafting. I think they've about got enough of that. And black is the original. He's the father of them all.
All these other races are derivatives of the black race.
That's right. That's right.
The characteristics of the white man is evil. He was made like that through nature, now we say. Naturally, he was made like that. We would say, then devil. We can say a devil cat out there, a devil element, a devil, we could call most any grafted thing a devil, you see. But actually, when we say Satan, we mean a man or a people that their weakness is not, say, confined to themselves. It spreads. And the others is affected by their weakness. And the white man, we say, is the devil. Why? Because of his weak physically coming into being from original man, aboriginal people of the earth. The race question, the origin of the races. In the beginning of the races, they numbered around four. And from these four races of people, they has produced many different types of people, but they are not, say, independent in their beginning. They came from one. We say today we have lots of various color people all over the earth. From, we say, from brown to white. We are not all the same color due to intermixing with such colors as black, brown, yellow, and red, and white. This has produced many other various colors.
Understanding the very origin and the nature and the coding of the white man, and understanding that his very existence and world control and domination and the maintaining of white supremacy is based on the murder of the black man and woman, then it is no wonder
that police brutality is to the level that it is in black communities all over America. The cold-blooded murder of Brother Aswan there in Brooklyn just a few weeks, months ago, shot 20 times, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 times. Brother Jerry Lee Aiming in Los Angeles, shot 39 times, over 6 feet tall, shot even on his shoulders, which meant, did the cracker get on a stepladder and shoot him on his shoulders, or did they shoot him and shoot him and shoot him down to the ground and keep shooting him even after he was on the ground? You don't have to shoot a damn elephant 39 times to kill an elephant. And Jerry Lee Aiming, as always, as all of us are, was the wrong man. Cracker was looking for a robbery suspect. Jerry Lee Aiming is playing with his daughter in the front yard. And as they are running across the front yard, the cracker assumes that he is a so-called fugitive of Just Us. And so they shoot him down on his lawn in front of his baby girl. Brother Philip Pinnell would still be alive in New Jersey. Brother Lewis there in St. Petersburg, Florida, would still be alive as the crackers rolled up on him and claimed that his car lunged forward, that one was on the side and the other one, what kind of fool this is, I don't know. The other cop was supposedly in front of the car looking through the front of the windshield. Common sense would tell a damn fool, you don't have to be a policeman, that you don't stand in front of the vehicle. But they claim the vehicle lunged forward. They shot him. The policeman was never hit by the vehicle. The vehicle never crashed anywhere into the pole or anywhere on the side. Brother Lewis would still be alive if we understood this dynamic better than we understand it. Our brother in Johnny Gamage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who was there in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, and the crackers said that he stepped on his brakes and his brake lights came on too many times. His brake lights were blinking too many times. And so they snatched him from the vehicle and all of them jumped on top of him and beat him and choked him and choked him until they choked in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Brother Johnny Gamage to death. Sister Eula May Love and the many that are from the New York area, from the New Jersey area, from Chicago, from Los Angeles, from the South, and throughout. All of them, brothers and sisters, victims of police brutality, and we don't even have the time to name all of us killed at the hands of brute beast police. It was former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall who spoke at Howard Jew University, sometimes called Howard University. And as he spoke there, he said that the Ku Klux Klan, that the white paramilitary right-wing organizations, the Nazis and others, that the Klan no longer just wears white hoods and white sheets, but now the Klan wears blue uniforms, carries a badge or a shield, and a legal, quote-unquote, weapon, that the Klan now wears black robes and sits on the judge's bench to rule from the courtroom. And so Thurgood Marshall, having been a Supreme Court justice, too afraid to make bold stands himself, but in a sense like the spook who sat by the door, on his way out, he could begin to give up a little bit of the truth. And right here in New York, we have Judge Bruce Wright. And as we read his book, Black Robes, White Justice, in Black Robes, White Justice, Judge Bruce Wright gives us the inside track on the criminal justice system of the white man. And never call it a criminal justice system unless you put the adjective in front of it, that it is a criminal justice system. In fact, it is the criminal justice system. It is no wonder that there is police brutality, because The white man is a criminal. He's the number one criminal on the face of the planet Earth. Criminals established the criminal justice system of white America. Every law in the penal code system of the state of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, California, Georgia, no matter where, and the penal code for the federal government of the United States of America, every law in the penal code book, every law was broken by the white man in order to establish that state, to establish this state, and to establish what he calls the United States of America. Every law. Some of you saw us on Harold Hope. That's what he is. That's a little Ebonics. I can't call him Harold Hoare. Ebonically speaking, he's Harold Hope.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand. We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. Right. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an elf. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship, in chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came here on the Mayflower. You were brought here by the so-called pilgrims or founding fathers. They were the ones who brought you here. We have a common enemy. We have this in common. We have a common oppressor, a common exploiter, and a common discriminator. So once we all realize that we have this common enemy, then we unite on the basis of what we have in common. And what we have foremost in common is that enemy, the white man. He's an enemy to all of us. I know some of you all think that some of them aren't enemies. Time will tell. In Bandung, back in, I think, 1954, was the first unity meeting in centuries of black people. And once you study what happened at the Bandung Conference and the results of the Bandung Conference, it actually serves as a model for the same procedure you and I can use to get our problem solved. At Bandung, all the nations came together. They were dark nations from Africa and Asia. Some of them were Buddhists. Some of them were Muslim. Some of them were Christian. Some of them were Confucianists. Some were atheists. Despite their religious differences, they came together. Some were communists. Some were socialists. Some were capitalists. Despite their economic and political differences, they came together. All of them were black, brown, red, or yellow. The number one thing that was not allowed to attend the Bandung Conference was the white man. He couldn't come. Once they excluded the white man, they found that they could get together. Once they kept him out, everybody else fell right in and fell in line. This is the thing that you and I have to understand. And these people who came together didn't have nuclear weapons. They didn't have jet planes. They didn't have all of the heavy armaments that the white man has. But they had unity. They were able to submerge their little petty differences and agree on one thing, that though one African came from Kenya and was being colonized by the Englishmen, and another African came from the Congo and was being colonized by the Belgian, and another African came from Guinea and was being colonized by the French, and another came from Angola and was being colonized by the Portuguese, when they came to the Bandung Conference, they looked at the Portuguese and at the Frenchmen and at the Englishmen and at the other Dutchmen and learn or realize that the one thing that all of them had in common, they were all from Europe. They were all Europeans, blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned. They began to recognize who their enemy was. The same man that was colonizing our people in Kenya was colonizing our people in the Congo. The same one in the Congo was colonizing our people in South Africa and in southern Rhodesia and in Burma and in India and in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. They realized all over the world where a dark man was being oppressed, he was being oppressed by the white man. Where the dark man was being exploited, he was being exploited by the white man. So they got together under this basis, that they had a common enemy. And when you and I here in Detroit and in Michigan and in America, who have been awakened today, look around us, we too realize here in America, we all have a common enemy. Whether he's in Georgia or Michigan, whether he's in California or New York, he's the same man. Blue eyes and blonde hair and pale skin. Same man. So what we have to do is what they did. They agreed to stop quarreling among themselves. Any little spat that they had, they'd settle it among themselves. Go into a huddle. Don't let the enemy know that you got a disagreement. Instead of us airing our differences in public, we have to realize we're all the same family. And when you have a family squabble, you don't get out on the sidewalk. If you do, everybody calls you uncouth, unrefined, uncivilized, savage. If you don't make it at home, you settle it at home. You get in the closet, argue it out behind closed doors. And then when you come out on the street, you pose a common front, a united front. And this is what we need to do in the community and in the city and in the state. We need to stop airing our differences in front of the white man. Put the white man out of our meeting, number one, and then sit down and talk shop with each other. That's all you gotta do. I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the black revolution and the Negro revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a black revolution and a Negro revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what our revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. Come on, man. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark. I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How are you going to be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered, and at the same time you're going to get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know?
But we want to welcome you to our rally, our unity rally, for a united black front. To unite all factions of our people. To unite every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes into one group. And you'll notice, whenever the white man thinks that we're going to call a rally to knock our own kind, you see him jammed out here. He wants to hear us say something against King or against Bunch or against Farmer, against someone of our own kind. He jams out here. But when you call a rally for black people to unite, let's get together, you don't see too many white folks then. They don't like black people to get together in unity and harmony. As long as you and I are going to attack each other or talk about each other or heap scorn and ridicule upon each other, the white man gets his kick. But when he knows that we're going to come together in unity and harmony, he won't get his kick. He will get kicked. When you see you and I getting together, it is because we have begun to realize that we have a common enemy. And the only time we'll be able to come together with a common objective and a common goal is when we first develop a common motive. And that motive is best developed by recognizing the common enemy. And that common enemy is the white man. I say that common enemy is the white man. The white man is your enemy, whether you are a Baptist, whether you are a Methodist, whether you are an Episcopalian, or whether you're a Muslim, or whether you're a Mason, or whether you're an Elk, If you find yourself running into opposition when you're looking for freedom, justice, and equality, or some kind of right, you have to agree, always the one who opposes your right is the white man. Some old blue-eyed, blonde-haired, bad-smelling white man. When he puts his club upside your head, he doesn't care whether you're a Baptist, a Methodist, but he does want to know whether or not you're a Muslim. Because he knows if you're a Baptist or a Methodist, you're going to turn the other cheek. You're going to try and love your enemy. You're going to pray for them that despitefully use you. So he's not worried about you. But he knows if you're a Muslim, you're not going to turn the other cheek. If you pray for him, you pray that God kills him, or God helps you to kill him. That's the only kind of prayer you pray. It's time for you and me to unite, to get together and get this big white ape off our back. You got a bad habit. You're hooked and don't know it. You got what's known as white disease. You think you can't get along without the white man. You think you can't get some clothes without the white man. You think you can't get a house without the white man. You think you can't even get a job without the white man. You're worse than a man who thinks he can't get along without heroin. You're worse than the man who thinks he can't get along without morphine. You're worse than the junkie. You're in worse shape than the junkie, because the junkie only has a little monkey on his back and you're running around with a big white ape named Uncle Sam on your back. America is faced with her worst domestic crisis since the Civil War, or since the Revolutionary War. For America now faces a race war. A race war is worse than a Revolutionary War. A race war is worse than a Civil War. A race war is a war in which no holds are barred. A race war is a war in which children are destroyed, in which children are mutilated, in which children face the same destructive wrath that grown-ups face. A race war is the worst war that you can conceive. And this war, race war, that is coming upon the head of the white man is something that he is bringing down upon himself. The entire country is on the verge of erupting into racial violence and bloodshed. Simply because 20 million ex-slaves are demanding freedom, justice, and equality here in America from their former slave master. 20 million so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, seeking human dignity, seeking human rights, seeking the right to live in dignity as a human being. And rather than give genuine respect and recognition to your cry for human rights, the American white man answers your nonviolence with violence. He answers your prayers and your freedom songs with false promises, deceitful maneuvers, and outright bloodshed. According to what we are taught from the white man's textbooks and his school, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War were two wars fought on American soil, supposedly for freedom and democracy. But if these two wars were really for the freedom and human dignity of all men, why are 20 million of our people still confined here in America and enslaved by second-class citizenship? Something is wrong. The truth is that the Revolutionary War was fought on American soil to free the American white man from the English white man. The Revolutionary War was never fought to provide freedom and democracy in this white country for the black man. Our people remain slaves here in America even after the Declaration of Independence was signed. In fact, most of the white founding fathers who signed the Declaration of Independence were nothing but slave owners themselves. It is sheer hypocrisy, sheer ignorance, sheer insanity for our people here in America to celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day, while white America still denies us first-class citizenship that goes with an independent people. And it is nothing but hypocrisy for the American white man to pretend that the Revolutionary War was truly a war of independence as long as 20 million black people here in America are denied the privileges of an independent people. Don't let the white man fool you. Don't let the white man smile at you and lull you to sleep. Behind that smile is a vicious heart. Behind those teeth is an animal-like beast who doesn't have it within him to want for you what he wants for himself and his own kind. Don't let that man fool you. When you look at that man, you're supposed to see him for exactly what he is. And if you want to know what he is, examine his deeds. Forget his words. He got a whole lot of pretty sounding words. Watch his deeds. His deeds are like the deeds of a snake, the deeds of a serpent, the deeds of a dragon, the deeds of a reptile, the deeds of a beast. Why, nothing but a race of beasts would take dogs and stick them on little black babies. Nothing but a race of beasts will stick dogs on black children and black women. Nothing but a race of beasts. And it is these deeds today that's causing the wrath of God to come down upon the head of the white man. And when you see him as he is and see how much hell he's catching, you're out of his mind to want to be with him. You're out of your mind to want to integrate with him. And you're really out of your mind if you take time to forgive him and ask God to have mercy on him. No, ask God to judge him. Ask God to do unto him as he has done unto you. He has caused your babies to suffer. Ask God to heap suffering upon his babies. He has caused your women to suffer. Ask God to heap suffering on his women. He has caused all of our people to suffer. You can't deny that. You may not like my saying it, but you can't deny it. Why, you got scars and knots on your head from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And every one of those scars is evidence against the American white man and his inhumanity to man. The Civil War was also fought on this continent, not to free the black slave, as is commonly taught in the white man's schools, but the Civil War was actually fought to preserve the Union, preserve this country, keep it intact for white people. It wasn't fought to set you free. It wasn't fought to give you some kind of emancipation. It wasn't fought to make you a citizen. It wasn't fought to give you civil rights. It wasn't fought because they respected you and loved you as a human being. It was fought out of greed. It was fought out of selfishness. It was fought to keep this country intact for their own white selves. In essence, this only means that the American white man fought the Revolutionary War to get this country for himself. And he then fought the Civil War to keep this country intact for himself. And today, he will now fight a race war to keep from having to share this white country on an equal basis with anyone else but his white self, especially on an equal basis with his 20 million former slaves. So again I ask, where will all of these demonstrations end? And who dares to say that our people are not justified by demonstrating their resentment over the injustice and mistreatment that our people have suffered these 400 years at the hands of this cruel, inhuman American white man? We have nothing to lose but our chains. We have nothing to lose but the hell we experience every day living here in these rat-filled slums. You have to excuse me for being blunt speaking and frank talking. We don't care who likes it or not, as long as we know it's the truth.
Thank you. smart as dummies. Can't read the language of Egyptian mummies. On a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youth, cause it's not like the future depends on it. But save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee, them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is. Savages the villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids. Stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a coffee plant and all of a sudden you are there Indiana Jones. And I keep out the gold and keep out the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and ever known. Put the words on this place that the world can see and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like we'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic line is where them two can defeat and them could have never clone. A spiritual DNA that's sent in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. Savali. Patience. What the old folks told me. Can you give a that? Discovering a world before this world. A world buried in time. Uncovered with rhyme. Gets no realer.
We born not knowing, are we born knowing all? We growing wiser, are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flooded, you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape changed again, everybody would have started off. The average man can't prove of most of the things that he chooses to speak of. And still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Gotta teach in universities and claim like they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose starts running. And the rich gets fixed up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows? Even though you drive cars, can you survive against all odds now?
It's crazy. When you feed people the truth, you don't know how they're gonna react. You're scared of wrongdoers. People that's just ignorant. You're scared of the truth. For now, who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it. No matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruining. Trying to get paper. What? Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson. Watch niggas play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsies, seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders. Make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes it's like part of me, but I got a real big spirit. I'm fearless, I'm fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. Like a military soldier since 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms. Felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Stay. To all the wisdom and knowledge seekers of the world. Savali. Patience. Yeah.
Black power, black power family, black power, black live on New Black Panther Party Radio. Call in right now, 718-664-6398. Press the number 1 to join our live discussion here tonight on day 558. The New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. under our national chairwoman, Sister Crystal Muhammad. You're live tonight with your host, Brother Khatib Sadiq, National Chief of Staff. And tonight, topic is we have a storm report, family, as y'all have been joining us for these last few weeks as we broadcasted and forecasted the models of Hurricane Ida, and it made landfall coastal Louisiana, and then its aftermath left our people with no power and left our people with no relief. And, of course, the relief that did come was from us, the Freedom Fighters, our people helping our people of the new Black Panther Party, Black Cross. So as you join us here tonight, we'll have this, it'll be a continuation of how it has been for the last few nights, where you get this good, powerful information from our great ancestors, as we heard in the beginning of this broadcast, Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad, the great, great Malcolm X, as you heard when we opened up this broadcast. But tonight we're going to talk about this Tropical Storm Nicholas, and we'll give the forecast model on what is going on, where this storm is going. We see automatically that it is heading toward Houston, Corpus Christi area, where it's going to make landfall. So it brings us back to Black Nation preparedness, the participation that we had, that we can take part in the new Black Panther Party, Black Cross. This tropical storm will produce rain. It will produce flooding. It's not a maybe, just based on the forecast. So we have to be prepared, those that are not in the regions that we're going to name in this storm report, the new Black Panther Party, Black Cross, the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. We say that there's so much for us to do. Let's put the word out about this storm and Hurricane Ida, and, of course, just the fact that it is the storm season for the Gulf region of Atlantic. Also, you can participate by sending a monetary donation to assist in the relief efforts of our people. You can donate by visiting New Black Panther Party Black Cross website, NBPPBlackCross.com. You can donate through Cash App at $BlackPowerDollar. So everybody that's joined us here tonight, if you've been following us, we have been talking about this tropical disturbance that's been in the Gulf. It's been upgraded to a tropical storm. We'll look at the public advisory. We'll look at some of where this rain is going to be and what's forecasted of how many inches and feet. But, man, we're telling our people right now, you got to be prepared. It's best to be prepared now. The Tropical Storm Nicholas Public Advisory from the NOAA, it gives a storm surge warning in effect for Port Aransas to San Luis Pass, Texas, Aransas Bay and San Antonio Bay, as well as Matagorda Bay. A hurricane watch is in effect from Port Aransas to Sargent, Texas. A tropical storm warning is in effect for the mouth of the Rio Grande to Freeport, Texas, Bahr el Mezquital to the U.S.-Mexican border. A storm surge watch is in effect for the mouth of the Rio Grande to High Island, Texas, and a tropical storm warning is in effect for north of Freeport to High Inland, Texas. We want to clarify, even though, again, like when we got the public advisory for Hurricane Ida, you know, we're dealing with the Corpus Christi. Again, let me pull up this brain map. Corpus Christi, Houston, Lake Charles, even New Orleans is in the pathway, Shreveport, even all the way Jackson, San Antonio, Laredo, but really Corpus Christi, Houston, Lake Charles are all in the area where these high rain is going to come from this tropical storm. So a storm surge warning, as we explained many times in this broadcast, means there's a danger of life-threatening rain and inundation from rising water moving inland from the coastline. Now with this tropical storm Nicholas is going to be coming into Texas coastline, and we have to be looking at this, family. So it's going to produce rain, even looking at the forecast just for Houston, Texas, and those that are in Lake Charles, Corpus Christi, those who are in these areas. You can look at the forecast yourself for your local area, but just the Houston forecast has rain for the next 13 to 14 days, as well as isolated thunderstorms. So again, this tropical storm, is we've been watching it for a few days now. Galveston also in the path of this storm. So we know now, as we've been forecasting this, the parts of the Texas coast are under hurricane watches. We just mentioned the storm is forecasted to gain peak sustained winds of 65 miles per hour Monday into Monday night. So tomorrow night, you're looking at high winds of 65 miles an hour. Now, again, with high winds comes down power lines. With high wind may come damage of property, windows, debris in the wind that could injure people. So, again, you have to err on the side of caution. We've talked about having our stock supplies and ready to do what it is that we need to do to survive. But again, family, we look at this tropical storm, Nicholas, what it's doing, where it's going, is expected to produce a lot of rain over the areas that we just mentioned. But as we continue to look at it, you find out this is what the 13th, 14th storm, in the region that's come through, So this is very serious. Again, from the 10th on marks the peak of the hurricane season. They're forecasting that the exact path of Nicholas is still not certain, or they're still uncertain about it. But, we have the information. We talk about in our storm report, we talk about Houston on the NOAA storm tracker has from Brownsville all the way up to Houston, all the way on the coastline, could produce upwards of 10 to 15 inches of rain. So that's a lot of rain. Also, you're looking at Lake Charles, and as it spreads out, you're looking at upwards of 4 to 6 inches of rain. Nothing under 4 inches of rain. But again, Corpus Christi, Houston, Lake Charles could see upwards of 10 to 15 inches of rain. And that's just based on with the current track and all this information. It always updates at 4 o'clock p.m. It always updates. So as we look at this, we look at the key messages. And again, those have changed slightly as we see the periods of heavy rainfall are expected to impact portions of the Texas and Louisiana coast. So that starts today. Moving on into the middle of the week, we talk about the high number of inches of rain. We talk about, again, these metropolitan areas, the Houston metropolitan area. And in the same situation, we're looking at the things that are in the public advisory. But for those that live and have lived in these areas, you know exactly what areas and what, pathways and byways and highways we're talking about, which could possibly be affected and could interfere with traveling in any instant. So again, as we continue to broadcast throughout this hurricane season, as we said, we're going to stay on course with giving the forecast of these reports. So we're talking to our black people in Houston, Texas, and the metropolitan surrounding areas, as well as Lake Charles, Corpus Christi, all of those cities on the Texas Louisiana coastline, and New Orleans could also see some of this rain upwards to about 4 to 6 inches of rain on top of what was already left behind by Hurricane Ida. So this is very important, family. This is very important. We got to keep an eye out for Tropical Storm Nicholas and what the conditions may be as it moves through the region. Now, as we have reported on this broadcast, in the aftermath of these storms, there is no relief that comes to our people from these government agencies or the agents from the agencies. In fact, it's black people. It's people put in a situation of a further survival and war of attrition. And we understand that the cracker also uses strategies, war, military, psychological operation strategies that match and line up with their plot for ethnic cleansing and genocide that they've been carrying out on our people. And it doesn't matter how we look at it, If it's not the COVID-19, it's the vaccine. If it's not the COVID-19 and the vaccine, it's the manipulation of the conditions during the storm and the manipulation of the conditions of our people, gentrification, and socioeconomic exploitation in the aftermath of the storm. So there's no doubt that we are the ones who have to come together and be a collective to bring the release to our people. These are the things that are life-saving. These are this is the mind state that we're prescribing to our people as those who are revolutionary scientists, who understand the questions why. And now that those questions have been answered, we only look for how, what can we do to ease the burden of oppression on the backs and necks of our people here in this wicked criminal enterprise. We're saying, family, that we're going to have to be the ones to step in, and it's on us and it's on our plate that we step up for our people. And after these storms have subsided, they leave in the aftermath worsening conditions of the war of attrition that exists, the constant violent ethnic cleansing and genocide against black people coming from this white government. So all of these things go into play when we talk about storms, or we're given a storm report. It lets us know that there's so much work to be done for those that are in these areas. Of course, we tell you to err on the side of caution. Make sure that you have your things prepared, whatever it is that you do to prepare your home. But at the same time, make sure that you are prepared, you are protected, and you can protect your livelihood in the case that panic may ensue, or again, in the aftermath, their manipulation within our community sees us put in a worsened condition of attrition. So we look to all of those who listen to this broadcast, our supporters, those who continue to support the new Black Panther Party, for your participation. Put the word out on these storms and what is going on, these storms and the aftermath of the condition of the storm, when how our people need the assistance of those Black people who are not in these areas who are able to give the assistance to our people. And we say to everybody listening here tonight, you can listen to this broadcast or any of our other broadcasts. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. And for all those listening, now is the time to give your field report. Press the number one. We want to hear from you here tonight on New Black Panther Party Radio, as we have continued now for 558 days to expose this false reality, this wicked criminal matrix of the white man, this criminal enterprise. We have exposed it from every level. Sometimes we just like to let you hear it from those who have come before us and have given us so much in the aisles of knowledge and wisdom and all of the things that we stand for as a nation. So in that same light, we'll continue on with our political education on these political education hours on New Black Panther Party Radio. And we'll hear some powerful wisdom from Dr. Amos Wilson as he keys us in on the political, socioeconomic, and all of the cultural aspects that we need to build our black nation. And join the new Black Panther Party by visiting our national website, mbpp.org. We'll hear about propaganda and nation building and how propaganda is used to manipulate the minds of our people and how we can use it to turn the narrative back to the perspective of the people. And we'll also, you'll hear about this criminal enterprise and the crimes that they have committed against our people. But all of this is for record as we move forward toward the solidification of our black nation as a sovereign people. So let us check out and keep on with our political education hours here on New Black Panther Party Radio, family. Check this out.
We must publish more as people. It's very, very important that we do that. We don't have enough information out here. That's very important, and we need solid information out here. We as a people must read also beyond our African-centered books. Some people are getting caught up in reading black-only books or books written only by black authors. I warned you, that can limit your perception. We're writing as much as we can. Other people are writing as much as they can. But frankly speaking, the number of African-centered books written by African authors is still very narrow in terms of the kind of knowledge and information we need to have as a people. And consequently, then, we must integrate a lot of other knowledge from a lot of other sources into an African-centered program. I am concerned with Africanizing information. You can get information from anywhere and any place and anybody. It's not the source of the information that is of major importance. It is the question that you have in mind and the intentionality that you have in mind when you contact that information that is of importance. When you come with certain African-centered questions and certain African-centered intentions, you can subvert the intentions of other people. And even though they may have written lies, they may have written a book to falsify your image, with an African-centered question in your mind and an African-centered intentionality in your mind, you can still gain useful information from that. And you can turn then their intentions into something that works for you. So you just can't say, well, because it's written by a white man, I'm not going to read it. Mm-mm. Or because, well, it's lying and they're intended to do. No, the fact that you know it's a lie is information. Now, why is it a lie? What is the end point of the lie? What is trying to be accomplished there? What is the technique of the lie? How is this hooked into propaganda? In what way is this group trying to transform my consciousness? What techniques and methods can I get from this to use against my enemies? What are their methods and techniques of propaganda that I can use to advance the propaganda for African people? Because, see, our propaganda is not necessarily lies either, you know.
Right.
And propaganda is not necessarily a negative term.
Yes.
Propaganda comes from the basic word to propagate, to move information, to communicate information, to persuade. And the methods of moving information and communicating information and of persuading people is not a science of Europeans only, not by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, when you study the oral tradition, you'll find that that tradition is very much grounded in persuasion.
What you're talking about
is very much
black
about
culture in America.
Persuasion. When you even talk about African culture in Africa, you must recognize and you must ask yourself, what is the political economy of the oppressed black culture? In other words, remember, our personality is a political economic structure. And therefore, if we let another people shape our personalities and shape our cultures, those cultures and personalities will operate to maintain their system and their dominance. So while we may praise black culture in America and African culture in Africa and in the diaspora, we must also ask ourselves the question, what is the political economy of these cultures? And what are the various personal and social identities these cultures produce and to whose end? We must recognize that the basic identities of the oppressed are largely socially manufactured by their oppressors' culture and related social practices. And to a good extent, what we call black culture in America today, even though it has deep African roots and African history still buried in it, is still related to and incarnations of Europe-centric culture. And we've got to recognize this and deal with. We just can't praise it unabashedly. We must look at the degree to which what we see as black culture today is an instrumentality of European culture. And I mean this in the real sense, and an instrumentality of European power, to the point of where African men and women actually fight in combat for European interests. You see, because of the way we have what? Defined ourselves as men and women. And even as the way we have sought to try to define black culture in America. You see. And now we have our own people on the soil of Africa. And now we have a man, Colin Powell, plotting out and designing the program for Europeans to maintain dominance over African people. Yes, because we've defined our Africanness in a peculiar way. Black male identity is hooked into this thing as well, which is one reason why we have a lot of problems today. The reclamation of our male youth and our female youth requires an appropriate, thorough, pragmatic, critical analysis, cultural analysis of the deculturation and reculturation of African Americans and their social products as represented by black male identities and female identities. It's not enough for us to show how we were decultured during the diaspora and slavery and so forth. It's very important for us to understand how we were recultured and reorganized. We are not uncultured simply because we don't have African culture. You see, we have been what? Recultured and rearranged and restructured. You see, and we must understand in depth how that restructuring took place and how it expresses itself in us and in the way we relate to each other. You see, because it is this reculturation, ultimately, that we must do what? We must reconstruct. We must tear down. We must remove outside of ourselves. So it's not enough to say what we have been missing as a people, or how African culture, what, taken away from our people, but we must come to understand how we have been newly created by another people, and how does that new creation under their power represents itself in our personalities and in our social lives, in the way we think, in the way we behave, in the way we perceive the world, in the way we relate to each other and the whole bit. Because it's with that understanding that you design an educational curriculum for African children. You see, you're not just going to teach them history and culture. You're not just going to raise their self-esteem. That's just the beginning. You got to say, uh-uh. Because you can feel good and still be Eurocentric, you know. And you can have high self-esteem and still be Eurocentric as well, you know. Yeah, so there's a whole other process going on. This is why the multicultural curriculum is not sufficient. It is not just a matter of teaching us to respect other people's culture and to look at and accept cultural differences. African people are in a process of reculturation and a process of reconstruction as a people, you see. It's not a situation where the Chinese say, well, you didn't teach my culture in the schools, even though my culture has maintained continuity for the last 10,000 years, you see. And even though I still speak Chinese, I still eat Chinese food, I still buy from Chinese restaurants, I still do almost everything, what, Chinese. Now, I just want you to respect my culture. But that's not where the African people are. You have a cultural discontinuity. You have cultural what? Trauma. Yes, you have a whole reconstruction to undergo. And therefore, a little Pollyanna multicultural education cannot meet the needs of African people. Even African people on the continent are in a process of what? Reconstruction and redesign. You understand? So no light course in dancing with other people and that kind of stuff is going to do what we need. Not at all. The reclamation of our male youth requires an appropriate, thorough, pragmatic cultural analysis of the deculturation and reculturation of African Americans and their social products as represented by black male and female identities. How these identities, whether considered pro-social or anti-social. I've told you on the other occasion that a great enemy to the black community is the good black person. Yes, is the law-abiding black person. Yes. Oh, yes. In fact, we're in this mess because of law-abiding good black people. Yes. What did I tell you? These youngsters that you want to damn in so many ways did not create the world that they live in. They were born and they are reared in the world that we created, that adults, what, created. They are not making the ghettos. They are not making the joblessness and unemployment. They are not making the poor schools and poor and miseducation. They are not doing and creating these things. It is who? Us. Us. Black adults. African adults. And to a great extent, it is us law-abiding and good ones. It is us ones who don't see color. Yeah. It is us who want to be loved by Koreans, want to be loved by Arabs, want to have racial harmony, want peace between the sisters and the brothers all over this land. Do you have your mind? And yet you can't have peace in your own house. You can't have peace in your own neighborhood. You can't have peace in your own streets. And it's just so Negroish. Really. He's going to solve the problem of all the people before he can solve his own. Yeah. He's going to have the great mosaic, and he can't even get his own piece together. But this is the role the world has set for us so everybody can sucker us, you see. Yeah, that's what all it's about. And what people in the world are going to have any confidence in your capacity to work for all men when you haven't demonstrated your capacity to do what? Work for yourself. I'm qualified to solve all men's problems. Solve your own problem, man. You haven't solved your problem yet. In fact, we don't need you to solve our problem. We're doing quite well. We're rich. We're powerful. We're in control. We got great armies, and you want to solve our problem? Yeah, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. But, you know, again, what did I tell you? In order for us to be in the condition we're in, we have to be what? Backwards. We have to be completely returned around. And we have to go in the very opposite of the way we should go as people. We have to forget our first impulse and change this thing around a bit, you see. We must understand here. And it is the pro-social ones. They feel good. I can spend my money where I want to. But why do you only want to spend it with other people then? What is it? I live wherever I want to. Then why do you want to live with only other people then? What is it? And watch the Negro, as I've said before. Yeah. I'm free to buy where I want to, but he never feels free enough to buy from himself. I'm free to live where I want to, and he thinks that means he has to live in a white neighborhood. You see? I'm free to do this, I'm free to do that. And each expression of his freedom requires that he gives up to someone else. The white man doesn't want to live in your neighborhood, but yet he doesn't feel like this and what? An infringement on his freedom. He doesn't buy from you, he doesn't feel that that's an infringement on his freedom. Doesn't live with you, doesn't feel that's an infringement on his freedom. Doesn't go to school with you, doesn't feel like that's an infringement on his freedom. You see? The Koreans, the same way. In fact, they feel freest the further they can get away. You see? But only the Negro, in trying to express his freedom, feels compelled to impose himself and his money and his wealth and his talent and everything else on outsiders and other people. Yeah, backwards. Turn around. And to do it for himself, he feels bad. He feels guilty. He suffers from a guilty conscience. He feels irreligious. But it has to be that way if we are to be what? Suckered and robbed as a people. Yeah. And this is the name of the game. There shall be no racial harmony for the next 20 or 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. You got to get used to the idea. You got to get used to the idea if you're going to win your freedom that you're going to be disliked by a lot of people. and a lot of ethnic groups. Yeah, you got to get used to living with great tension if you're going to reclaim yourself and reclaim your life. If you're trying to maintain peace and harmony with every other ethnic group, they're going to put conditions on it. You can maintain harmony if you let me sell to all your kids and you never own anything. You can maintain harmony as long as you don't disturb my economic domination. It's just like this anti-Semitism stuff that's got LIB jammed up. Oh, yeah. People, you know, at one point it's not a race, it's a religion. At another point it's a race. You know, what's going on here? The thing that you have here, ladies and gentlemen, is a political strategy.
Yes, sir.
And an economic what? Strategy. An instrument of what? Control. A means by which one can control the behavior of others. You can call it religion, ethnicity, anything you want to. But its ultimate reality is that it is used to do what? Control the behavior and perceptions of other people in the interest of the people who belong to that thing. That's all it is. And the first question you ask, and so the thing goes out, you're anti-Semitic. Now, it doesn't matter what you said, whether you told the truth or not the truth, or this or that, has nothing to do with that. Not at all. It has to do. Now, the next question you're going to ask is, oh, how can I not be anti-Semitic? Don't say this, don't say that, don't do this, don't do that, and then we won't call you what? Anti-Semitic. And so in striving to be what? Not anti-Semitic, you then what? Fall under the control of another people. Regardless as to whether they are right or wrong, or regardless of how unfair they are, as soon as you meet the requirements of not being called anti-Semitic, you're under control. And yet, here's a people that's less than 3% of the American population, less than 0.1% of the world's population, who through the use of that term and through the throwing of that accusation can manipulate whole political and economic and social systems. And then they're the first one to tell you that you shouldn't talk in terms of race. And you should not use what? Your ethnic identity as a base of what? Power. And you should not use your ethnic identity as the base for political and economic strategies, you see, and as a means of what? Controlling other people's behavior and so forth, you see. Ethnicity is much deeper than the demarcation of ethnic characteristics, man. You see, and cultural characteristics, you see, are part of the totality of a people's power. And we have to understand that. And when we are training our youngsters, we have to understand that. We have to get these young men to understand, and when we are training them for manhood and the young women for womanhood and so forth, it requires that we perceive white supremacy as the major social and political and economic spiritual problem to be resolved by African people, and that we ask ourselves the question, what kinds of men and women must we produce in order to overthrow white supremacy? And overthrow white supremacy must be our goal. If you're not about overthrowing white supremacy, you're not about African-centeredness. Mm-mm. And the other thing is, if you're not about nation-building, you're not about African-centeredness either. Anyone here is talking about African-centeredness and so forth is not talking about nation-building and not talking about the building of a pan-African economic and political system is really, to my mind, not talking about African-centeredness. No, sir. Because the education of our children and what that education means, and what it should contain, and the educational experiences they should undergo, must be defined within a framework of overall purpose and goals for our people. Where are we going? What is our major problem in the world? One of our major problems in the world is white supremacy. This is not the problem of white children, you see. And an appropriate education of African children then requires that they be trained to do what? Solve that problem. And an education that does not include how to overthrow white supremacy among black people and how to destroy white power over black people is not African-centered. Mm-mm. I don't care how much culture you teach, how much history you teach. It's not about that. It's not about that. An education that is not about building a black nation and a nation within a nation and an African system of people cannot be an African-centered education. When you study economics and science and all of these other things, they must be studied within the frame of where you're going as a people and as a whole. You see? And their organization must be structured in terms of overall goals, national and international goals. When the United States has been challenged, white folk in the United States were challenged by the Japanese, they looked at what? Their educational system. And they are trying to transform their educational system and the educational experiences of their youngsters so that they can create in them the motivations and attitudes and relations that will make them possible to defend themselves against the growth of Asian power in the world. They're not just teaching them A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, or how to add accounts. All of this has to be integrated under a national goal. You see, we are doing business not only just because we want to go to work and come home and buy beer and look at football, but because doing business in this way and relating to each other this way and doing accounting in this way and so forth, allows us as a nation to protect our interests, to maintain our style of life, to maintain our freedom and independence, even though you as an individual think you are just going to work and coming home. You see? And think you're just drinking beer and looking at the football game. But frankly, if you look at the totality of the way the economic and political system operates, you're a part of a total system, and what you do is integrated in a system that is designed to act in the world. Now, we as African people then must lose our unconsciousness in this system. We must become conscious of ourselves as workers, as professionals, as this and that, and whatever we are, and be aware of how what we do is integrated and related to the whole of African people and to African ends and purposes. So it is not enough just to gain skills or just to gain knowledge. You must ask skills for what, knowledge for what, and in what way does my skill and my knowledge contribute to the advancement of African people as a whole? In what way can these skills be institutionalized and be built into the culture such that our culture expresses itself as power? About 2 or 3 dozen policemen. This, of course, comes after a time when they broke into a police precinct station and ransacked it. How many of those people went to jail? How many got fingerprinted? How many of them are in prison? And so forth. And yet, can we say that they did not commit a crime? You see, what do we have here then? A situation, you see, where if you use crime statistics, you're not going to find those Hasidic Jews in the statistics. You're not going to find them on the prison rolls. You see, that's what power does for you, isn't it? It permits you to commit a crime and keep yourself out of jail. And then you can go into the jailhouse and look at the statistics and compare the number of blacks arrested on probation, on parole, and compare them with Hasidic Jews. And say, well, I see one is very big and the other one is very little. Therefore, the blacks must be more criminal than the Hasidic Jews. You can never be more wrong in your life. You have to understand. But we have to get away from that. You know, and this is the kind of teaching that goes on in the university today. Understand that when white boys and white girls are not on the rolls, the prison rolls, and in the prison populations, it points to the efficiency of their criminal organization. How do we say that? A mafia don who has a very efficient criminal operation, who can create a murder incorporated, who can engage in drug trafficking and killing and murdering and extortion, the same kind of games I've been reading to you here tonight, can earn so much money until he can keep his children innocent, keep them out of jail, give them good educations, and the whole bit. You understand what I'm getting at? In other words, those children's names do not appear on the crime blotters. They are not in the jails because their fathers are such good mafia operators. So even their innocence speaks to the efficient criminality of their fathers. And because then the white boys are not in jail with the black boys, do not make the assumption that means the white boys are less criminal or their fathers are less criminal. It means they just have a criminally efficient operation. We got to move on here. This country then is an imperialist criminal operation because it robs the people at home, and you see it as it robs the people abroad. It constricts the black males to fight its criminal wars. It maintains worldwide terror and extortion. It, of course, maintains the criminality in Namibia, South Africa, Angola, Panama, Grenada, Central South America, Zaire, and the whole bit. I accuse this nation of being a criminal nation because it engages in the health neglect of our people. This nation, as determined by its own task force, indicates that black and minority health, in the area of black and minority health, there are 60,000 more minority deaths per year based on an expectation of equal death rates for blacks and whites. As a matter of fact, melanin gives you an added lifespan. So what are we saying here? That this society, due to its neglect of the health of black people, excesses the lives of some 60,000 black people a year. This is murder. It engages in child neglect and child abuse as it maintains the infant mortality rate of black children to more than twice that of white children, as it maintains a measles rate 16 times that of white children, as it maintains the poverty of our black children, increasing the poverty of black children at the rate of some 750,000 children a year. It engages in educational neglect, as it engages in the miseducation of our children, as it refuses to fund the Head Start and early childhood education programs, as it refuses to fund the education programs under Chapter 1. And I wish I had the time to read the statistics here of how our children are killed and our families are destroyed through educational neglect. This criminal society then sets up the psychology of black-on-black violence by creating a sense of powerlessness in our young people, by projecting negative stereotypes upon their mentality such that they seek to escape an African identity and alienate themselves from their African selves and internalize the values and perceptions projected by the dominant society, as their appetites are distorted so that they literally then eat themselves to death or desire things which will destroy them, as it frustrates them such that in their anger they turn against themselves, as it makes them displace their anger against their fellow victims. This society is a criminogenic society because it serves as the best model of criminality. The black-on-black criminal has learned from the best of teachers, the white-on-black criminal. It engages in criminality as it supplies weaponry to our children and alcohol and drugs? How does this relate then to our adolescents? Recognize that almost 50% of the young men who die between 15 and 24 die as a result of homicide, black-on-black homicide. This would be a major health problem if we were another ethnic group. Recognize that the cream of the African race is being destroyed before it has a chance to reach manhood. Homicide is the leading cause of death of black males between 15 and 24. Is it because of the jobs that maintain the families of black people across this country and ship them to other places and exploit the other populations of this world? We accuse them of imperial criminality and of organized crime. This nation is an organized mafia operation. I have indicated to you that it is best when you look at the international situation that you will come away with a better understanding if you apply the concepts of mafia psychology to the international relations that are going on right now and that have been going on. We don't have time to talk about a chapter I do in here that I call Quantifying the Myth. You know, the myth of making black people appear to be more criminal than white people. A myth that is statistically supported by the number of black men and women arrested, by the number of black men and women incarcerated, by the number of black men and women under probation and parole. And of course, now we are supposed to look at those statistics and compare them between black and white. And because we see more blacks arrested, more blacks in jail, more blacks in probation and parole, we are supposed to make the illogical assumption that blacks are more criminal than whites. I told you time and time again, ladies and gentlemen, that in a society that's based on lies, as this one is, in a society that can only exist based on deception, that truth is reversed. That's in essence what a lie is. And therefore, when you look at the so-called statistics that seek to establish the criminality of black people, turn it around and turn them around, and you will recognize that the criminals are outside the prisons. We don't have time to talk about it tonight, but that's the value of having power, you see. You can make criminal whatever you want to make it. You can legitimize your own criminality and perverseness. You can call virtue a crime and arrest people for being virtuous. And then you can look at the statistics and say, aren't they more criminal because they are in jail? Some of you read the recent situation here in the Hasidic community where a bunch of Jews ran out, broke arms, and hurt the police, what, about 2 or 3 dozen policemen. This, of course, comes after a time when they broke into a police precinct station and ransacked it. How many of those people went to jail? How many got fingerprinted? How many of them are in prison? And so forth. And yet, can we say that they did not commit a crime? You see, what do we have here then? A situation, you see, where if you use crime statistics, you're not going to find those Hasidic Jews in the statistics. You're not going to find them on the prison rolls. You see, that's what power does for you, isn't it? It permits you to commit a crime and keep yourself out of jail. And then you can go into the jailhouse and look at the statistics and compare the number of blacks arrested on probation, on parole, and compare them with Hasidic Jews. And say, well, I see one is very big and the other one is very little. Therefore, the blacks must be more criminal than the Hasidic Jews. You can never be more wrong in your life. You have to understand, but we have to get away from that. You know, and this is the kind of teaching that goes on in the university today. Understand that when white boys and white girls are not on the rolls, the prison rolls, and in the prison populations, it points to the efficiency of their criminal organization. How do we say that? A mafia don who has a very efficient criminal operation, who can create a murder incorporated, who can engage in drug trafficking and killing and murdering and extortion, the same kind of games I've been reading to you here tonight, can earn so much money until he can keep his children innocent, keep them out of jail, give them good educations, and the whole bit. You understand what I'm getting at? In other words, those children's names do not appear on the crime blotters. They are not in the jails because their fathers are such good mafia operators. So even their innocence speaks to the efficient criminality of their fathers. And because then the white boys are not in jail with the black boys, do not make the assumption that means the white boys are less criminal or their fathers are less criminal. It means they just have a criminally efficient operation. We got to move on here. This country then is an imperialist criminal operation because it robs the people at home, and you see it as it robs the people abroad. It constricts the black males to fight its criminal wars. It maintains worldwide terror and extortion. It, of course, maintains the criminality in Namibia, South Africa, Angola, Panama, Grenada, Central South America, Zaire, and the whole bit. I accuse this nation of being a criminal nation because it engages in the health neglect of our people. This nation, as determined by its own task force, indicates that black and minority health, in the area of black and minority health, there are 60,000 more minority deaths per year based on an expectation of equal death rates for blacks and whites. As a matter of fact, melanin gives you an added lifespan. So what are we saying here? That this society, due to its neglect of the health of black people, excesses the lives of some 60,000 black people a year. And indeed, in cooperation and communalism, this is how we prevent alienation. If the society twists our desires and makes us desire the things that destroy us and hate the things that advance our interests, we must learn a new set of values, inculcate deep and abiding cultural goals, learn to discern when one is being manipulated and exploited. Our children must learn the mechanisms of advertising, mass hypnosis, subliminal suggestion, conditioning and lies and propaganda. They must learn to be productive so that they can produce for their own desires. They must learn to assume the ownership of the means of production and learn self-control. If the society moves our children into black-on-black violence because it engages them in frustration and the dealing with their frustrations in incorrect ways, then we must train our children to be task-oriented, to solve the causes of problems and not engage in dealing with the symptoms of problems. We must teach them to discern the sources of their frustration and remove those sources and tear them out from the root. We must teach them how to use their anger and aggressive feelings positively. Every emotion that is in the human mind is there for a positive reason, and they must be used for positive reasons. Anger is a positive emotion if it is used correctly. So is aggression. God did not put anger and aggression in you just for negative purposes alone. But we must be taught how to use those things. We must teach them to be resourceful and how to get around those frustrations, to develop social intelligence, skills, and competence. We must teach them coping strategies for stress. If they displace their anger and use their anger to attack themselves and destroy themselves and to destroy others like themselves, we must get them to know their real enemy. We must get them to recognize that this enemy, this white man, is only a man, that he bleeds and dies like any other man. We must read to him the history of our African fathers as they cut down and mowed down the white man, and how they were only betrayed by their own cupidity. We must have them understand that. Let them read the story of the Egyptians as they cut, the Ethiopians as they cut down the Italian armies, and read the stories of the other Africans as they cut down the white armies. Bush thinks he's gotten away with this little game, but it's not over. It's not over. By the very fact that he engaged in this war, we now know what his game plan is. We now know his weaknesses and his strengths. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, his strength is his weakness. Understand? And we're going to teach our children how to tear up the soft underbelly of this dragon and this monster called white America. I was down in Tuskegee last weekend, and I saw the Chappie James Aerospace Center. Interesting. But one thing we've learned about this war here is that once we get an Air Force, we are ready. And so we're going to set them up. The only thing that got this man across was he was not resisted in the air. And we will meet him in the air and on the ground. Recognize that the white man can be defeated, that he's not invincible. We must teach them that the displacement of anger at self or at others like at ourselves makes matters worse and is self-destructive. If they are having problems with their self-concept, then we must give them great support. We must affirm them and affirm their identity. We must teach them confirmations, so that they know how to make positive statements to themselves and affirm themselves. We must teach them how to stop negative thoughts and change the nature of the situation that they are in. If they are engaged in violence and black-upon-black violence, we must teach them how to resolve conflicts between themselves without destroying themselves. It means then that we have to develop relevant educational programs. We have to develop a parallel school system. We have to make this government, by hook or crook, fund the health care systems of the local and state localities of our people. We must emphasize prevention in the black community, change the lifestyles of our people who are literally eating themselves to death, or whose lifestyles are literally destroying their health. My next book is going to be on black health, by the way, and I'm going to show how we carry out the death wishes of whites through our eating and health habits. Because they wish that we will die, we accommodate them by drinking too much Pepsi and all the other things. We're going to emphasize critical problems. We must develop programs to ensure adequate prenatal counseling and care. We must develop systems to neutralize the criminogenic system. We must set it our goal, not the assimilation to the society, but the elimination of this society as it is. We must set it our goal, economic development, the development of the economic status of our people across this world. We must engage in the development of a nation within a nation. How can the people keep saying that they are kept out of this society and are separated and segregated from this society and not use that to their advantage and create a nation within a nation and get ready to fight the other evil nation in the society? We must engage our people in consumer education, withdraw from those entities and those industrial systems and so forth that are a part and partial of the destruction of the black community and the communities of Africans. We have to stop buying those Nike sneakers and Reebok sneakers that sell 70% of their wares to black people while they refuse to even franchise black stores to sell those sneakers. We must stop buying Ford Motor Company cars when they take out those car factories from Detroit and import them into Polish and other neighborhoods. And after we get through with Ford, we stop buying GM. And after we get through with GM, we stop buying Toyota and the rest. We will not subsidize the destruction of our people. We must develop an African-centered, full African-centered educational program. We must educate our males. It is very important that we pull these males aside and train them for manhood, train them for husbandhood and fatherhood, and train them for the military so that they undertake the overthrow of the system. We must engage our young people in political education so that they will learn how to engage in the political overthrow of their enemies and organize themselves politically. We must train those of us who want to go into this church into a new theology, that it is not enough to paint the face of Jesus or to paint the face of angels and still believe in the same Eurocentric ideology and theology. We must go into these prisons and take our men from these prisons. These are the men who must be used to defend our community. They must be rehabilitated on the lines of an African-centered philosophy and on political lines and military lines so that they can use their aggression now, not against themselves or against the nation of African people, but against the true enemies of African people, the white man. We must develop regional conferences in our nation within a nation and a national congress so that we can coordinate and facilitate the talents of our people who are engaged in various aspects of the political, social, and economic reorganization of this country. We must build schools for leadership. We must build schools that engage in policy development and analysis, and schools for developing strategy, schools for developing a military machine to protect us against the interests of Europeans. Recognize that there's one thing that's clear, that the imperialistic system has only one constant, and that is self-interest. And when it is in its self-interest to destroy and wipe black people from the face of this earth, it will engage in that activity. You have the history of the Indians in America to show that, that when a people are economically not useful to the Europeans proceed to annihilate those people. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we must prepare for revolution and prepare for war. Thank you very much.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that put the kids to bed, this that I got realness. I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt, the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish, I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA, born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate. And I'm gon' shine like I'm supposed.